Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
I'm excited to introduce this first episode of Smart Coaching. And today, we're going to focus on building the team culture. And joining me as the co-hosts of this series are Dr. Clayton Kuklick and Dr. Brian Garrity. Guys, great to talk to you again.
Yes, looking forward to having a good podcast here, Keith. And thanks for having us on.
Yep, likewise, Keith. Thanks for having us. I look forward to speaking with you and the rest of the coaches and hearing some feedback and, you know, sharing a little bit of knowledge and learning from everybody as we go.
Guys, before we get into today's topic, I want to give our listeners an overview of what we're trying to accomplish here over the course of the season. I know as coaches, this is a time that we really get focused on the technical and tactical side of coaching. And we spend a lot of time on our diagrams. We spend a lot of time watching film. But there is, by and large, the people side of our profession that we really need to pay attention to and make sure we're keeping ourselves up on. And, you know, when we did our podcast the last time and met after that, we talked about giving coaches a chance to reflect on what they've done over the course of a week and have an actionable plan for their week moving forward. Things outside of the realm, like I said, of the technical and tactical. So I'll let you guys add to that concept of what we're doing here over the course of the season.
Well, I think in part, you know, the name reflects, you know, pioneering, sport coaching event. We're trying to think about coaching in a intellectual and a smart way. You know, and again, you've been around plenty of coaches, and so have I, and Clayton has, and great coaches, too, are usually pretty bright. And so, you know, we're going to cut through some of the fluff and, you know, just academic talk, but we're going to talk about coaching in a smart way. You know, we're going to try to be innovative, review the literature, you know, and provide it in a easy to understand way, but a way that also gets at some complexities, nuances that helps people think differently, helps them think creatively, and have a more robust thought process around what they're doing rather than, you know, I just go tell kids what to do, or, you know, we line up and call hike. I don't want to do that. And so anybody can do that or provide something pretty simple and lightweight. So we want to, you know, go back and forth between, you know, clear understanding of some things as well as giving some richness to everyday life. And you know, in a way, too, when you're in the locker room, that's what coaches are talking about. And there is no magic sauce. There's some, you know, wrong ways. There's some right ways. And there's a lot of different ways in between. And what we'll try to do is bring the research, the theory, you know, the critical thinking to the applied practice. You know, we use a word here called praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S, as a way to integrate, you know, critical thinking in everyday life in practice. So, you know, I get a little defensive. I don't want to be some ivory tower, you know, stuffy-headed academic. We've coached and been out there, and that's who we're talking to and who we want to hear from.
Yeah, I would just add that, you know, some of the content that we've put together thinking about, you know, these podcasts moving forward is trying to address certain things that are happening at particular times in the season. For example, you know, when coaching stress may increase and or be heightened at different points in the season. And we'll talk about how to kind of perhaps manage that, you know, managing mid-season slumps, you know, practice planning and pedagogy, preparing for the postseason as another example later on down the road as you get closer to the postseason play. And then also strength and conditioning practices, perhaps on the front end and during the season, that we'll cover and talk about how that's integrated during the season or in preparation for the season as well.
Guys, as we get into today's topic, it's one we've talked about and continue to talk about quite a bit on this podcast, whether that's with guests who are in that space completely or our coaches talking about how they do this with their individual position groups, their units, their teams. Culture has really become a big buzzword in coaching today. My worry is that it's a little bit misunderstood and that there's a disconnect between the work we do in the off season to build a culture in a team and then how that translates into the specifics of practice. And I think the best teams know how to integrate that and know how to take it from something that's a little bit more abstract. You're standing in front of the team, you're talking about those concepts, you're getting them to talk to you about those things, to actually making that work in actions. And I mentioned to you guys before we started going here that I was out at a Division I, an FBS school this spring, and watching them in their spring practice, and it was evident to me that one of the foundations of their culture was to compete in every phase and to try to be the best, to try to win in every phase of what they were doing. And that made its way and materialized in the form of every single drill they had, which there was competition involved. There was a winner and a loser named in that drill. And in the bigger drills that were highlighted, they had one of their coaches with actual microphone to their speaker system calling out the winner every single time. They were calling out the winner. So you could see that they integrated that, that it worked its way all the way into practice, into their drills, into everything they're doing. What I see in general, and I'm interested on your input on this, is that there's a lot of disconnect. We do all those things to build that culture, and we're going to be about this and that, et cetera, and it's on our T-shirts, it's on our walls, and then we hit the season, and somehow we don't bridge that gap to what's happening on the field, and those things don't make their way into every nook and cranny of what we do in our drills and how we communicate on the field, how we communicate in practice, how we deal with our players after practice, that there has to be that carryover. All the work we did prior to that is kind of worthless, or at least loses some value.
Keith, one of the things that comes to mind when you bring that up too is that in sports too, and in football, there's, right, you want to declare a winner, you want competition, you want guys to compete. You know, Clay and I were talking just before we got started too, that you've got to connect these things to the actual skills and tools to give athletes to get better.
Yep.
So just declaring the winner, you know, is going to obviously reinforce the value of winning and somebody being better than somebody else. What's implicitly going on though is right, is that we might not be connecting to the athlete, especially the ones that aren't winning. What do you need to do to get better? If an athlete is consistently losing, or you know, they're inconsistent, maybe they win some, they lose some, and all again, if the coach is spending time at practice just declaring winners and worried about, you know, declaring the winner and using the microphone to declare the winner, you know, we might be missing the boat on having to help an athlete refocus, regulate their arousal, get stronger in the weight room, figure out pad leverage. You know, if we're, again, we're just over-focused perhaps on competition, then by the time the season rolls around, the athlete has never actually developed the skills to succeed. They've only been told that winning is good and losing is bad. And, you know, the ones that have won, they're going to go out there and hopefully just do that. But if, again, when the winners go out into a real competition and they're going to lose sometimes, or they're going to face different looks and reads, et cetera, you know, they've got to be able to adjust. And, again, if all they've been taught, or most of what they've been taught, is a pat on the back and, you know, been valued for just winning, they might not have the skills actually to do what they need during the competition, to make a decision, to adjust, to regulate their, you know, energy, arousal, focus, a variety of technical skills, different reads. So it could be, you know, the wrong focus, you know, over focusing on competition at times.
Yeah, what I was thinking, Keith, when you were saying that, and then Brian's comment, was that, you know, that kind of implicit message of, you know, winning is a part of the culture, but there's these other things that are hopefully trying to be reinforced, but they don't have to be implicit. They can be, you know, brought and embedded in different drills or activities with those different strategies that he was talking about, like, okay, well, how do I get to go be a winner, or be a winner at this particular drill, and how to get better at those, you know, very subtle things that, you know, are difference between, you know, winning in that drill and not winning in the drill, and bringing that to a conscious level of, you know, what are the characteristics that, you know, kind of gets you to the point where you're the winner in that drill as part of the culture. One other thing that I was also thinking about too, when you were talking about, you know, the example of, you know, that was pretty clear that competition, or, you know, was part of that culture that you were explaining. I've been in situations where, you know, I can remember walking the first time into a locker room and seeing, you know, 10, 15 different words: integrity, resiliency, compete, you know, and there were 10 or 15 of these different buzzwords that were supposedly part of the culture, but they really never got defined, or did we really know what they were? So, you know, our culture wound up being so spread thin that we weren't really, any of those concepts weren't really strong. They weren't really defined, nor did we have behaviors that really matched those things. So, you know, I was just providing that as to kind of show that the other end of the spectrum, you know, that we can sometimes overinflate it to some degree, with all, you know, various different buzzwords that we can, that we hope we want our team to be about, but rather than kind of focusing on three or four and having a strong, you know, a strong culture on those three or four different characteristics of our team, rather than, you know, being spread thin with like 10 or 15 different things that, you know, we want our culture to be about.
I think you make some great points there. And the thing that I saw, you know, going on, there was one particular coach in charge of, you know, declaring the winner, loser, et cetera. But those position coaches were doing exactly what you said is, you know, I could hear them coaching up in their language and, you know, being very brief with communicating to both of those guys on both sides, reinforcing, here's what you did right to win, and to the other guy, here's what you need to do to win. And I think that's an important part of it. And I would also say, I think that's where we miss out on a lot. So if I were to go to that practice and say, that's a great idea, and I didn't carry through, you know, with that last part I just mentioned, I'm only declaring the winner or loser, then yeah, yep. I think we miss some opportunities there. And so, you know, that's where I think we get to this topic today of culture that goes from point A to point Z and covers all the things that it needs to make sure that those ideas you talked about, you know, and sometimes, like you said, spread too thin, those things that are maybe abstract in some ways make their way into something that are specific behaviors. So we'll start with that idea that what is culture and what does it entail?
One definition of culture, right, comes from a book by Jay Coakley, Sport and Society. It's on like the 13th edition. Jay Coakley is kind of an eminent sports sociologist. And Jay just simply defines culture as the shared ways of life and shared understandings that people develop as they live together. So that's a basic definition of culture. And what it entails, too, are the beliefs and values of that coach, of the institution, you know, whether that be a high school or a college or professional team, a club team as well, how they train together, how they relate to each other. And then they have that shared understanding of what they're all about that develops. So that's a basic definition of culture.
I would just add that a couple different things that, you know, if we drill down on the word like values and beliefs, you know, what that actually entails is behaviors and actions, not only just discourse or words that are coming out of my mouth that I'm saying is a value per se, but also the actions and behaviors that match are in alignment with those beliefs and values that that Brian was talking about. And they, you know, obviously, like I said, I've been in locker rooms where there's 50 of them, you know, those beliefs that we need to be this, and there's so many of them. But what are the actual actions and behaviors that are in alignment with those beliefs and values?
At this point in the season, we're into the season, and some of those things, you know, maybe we made those mistakes, maybe were too broad, but we have the opportunity now, I guess, to maybe get focused, get detailed, get specific, you know, especially in this coming week on aligning our culture with the things that are happening out on the field, with how we coach, with the expectations of our players, with what we expect of them from the littlest things to maybe how they get in and out of their huddle or stance or whatever it might be. Again, it has to be something that's translating in a whole. What do you do, I guess, at this point to get that kind of focus and to start to identify, okay, this is what we believe and this is how we need to behave?
I think it helps for coaches, too, to think just like you would practice or develop that practice plan for technical and tactical skills, like you mentioned earlier. You know, think through your character or your values, your social-emotional skills, your psychological skills, you know, the whole holistic athlete and a holistic team, and think through week by week over the season what's important, because you're going to have so much time and you really, the athletes can only absorb so many messages. And so being very concrete for example, week one, we're going to talk about competition, hard work, and effort, or learning from our mistakes, you know, as a learning opportunity of this growth mindset. And maybe you get those three kind of key points, and you're going to talk about those in different ways throughout the day, before practice, during practice, after practice. You're going to connect, like Clayton just said, you're going to connect that, hey, when you do this drill, this is how we're going to show hard work. This is how we're going to show competition. This is how we're going to show, and those real concrete behaviors in terms of, you know, if you get knocked down, you get back up. You know, I want to see guys hustling to the front of the line. You know, I want you guys, and during breaks and whatnot, if you didn't understand something, come ask me a question. Paying attention, encouraging your teammates. So ways that they actually know how to develop or to show those behaviors to, related to those values. And keeping it tight that first week on a few key things. The second week, maybe a couple more things. And you'll build that pyramid. You know, they'll build the foundation first with those things that you think are the most essential to, you know, the athlete and team performance. And then as the weeks go on and you're making, you know, week-by-week adjustments, the hard work, the competition may stay a foundation, but then you're going to add a little bit more complexity to it. And real quick, as I'm thinking about that, I say this, I'm going to try to not contradict myself, but also come back and go, you know what, I read an interesting study lately or recently. They were looking at elite-level athletes. I think it was in soccer. Mm-hmm. And the elite-level athletes actually took more rest during the match than the non-elite athletes. And you go, what are the implications of that maybe for hard work? You know, because we extol hard work all the time, right? You know, we like to think that this is a meritocracy and people succeed by just working hard. And there's some truth to that, too. And there's also, you know, not some truth to that. But if your best athletes know when to walk, know when to take a break, know when to, you know, train hard during the week and then know when to rest and recover, you know, that's a skill. That's something that we can teach, too. And coaches need to be mindful that, you know, there's going to be maybe some negative effects or downsides or people that take it in a different direction because they've got a different life. They've got different experiences. And so you got to be careful about it, you know, when you just repeat these mantras too and the values like hard work or competition, et cetera, and everything then becomes, I guess I can say a pissing contest, you know, and next thing you know, you've got conflict or burnout and other problems that could arise if you overdo it as well. So perhaps one of those core values then is balance and thinking about these things a little bit more rather than, you know, when you're talking to a 13, 14-year-old and they're going to, you know, soak it up and hang on every word that the coach is saying. And then next thing you know, they're getting up early, they're training, you know, three times a day, and then they got a stress fracture or something like that could occur too.
Yeah, I have personal experiences of that. I mean, I can remember being an athlete and, you know, my whole thing I hung my hat on was like hard work and being tough. The next thing you know, I'm running in the walls, going after balls and everything like that. And it makes you wonder like, oh, was it all that worth it or whatever being off the field because I'm going so 110% that I'm not paying attention to, you know, things that could be, it could cause injury or keep me off the field. But that's just an example. Brian, I'll bounce this back, and Keith, you can jump on in this, because we were talking about culture, and I know this is early in the season, but, you know, what if some of this comes up in the literature is how to kind of change culture? So some coaches may be coming into a coaching situation where there's kind of some degree a culture already established, and there may be need for change. Maybe there's not a need for change, but you know, I'm just kind of opening that because that's something we see up in the literature. In the literature is kind of the conflicts with changing in culture, maintaining a culture, and how to kind of go about doing that.
One of the things that I've seen in that regard and maybe even experienced is that, like I said, you spend your time laying that groundwork, the foundation. You're working maybe a certain way in the weight room or in your strength and conditioning, and then you head into your season, and I think where you have to be very conscientious of making sure that you're doing things that are getting the change you want is to really focus on how you practice. And I think I've seen a lot of mistakes, maybe even made some myself, where we don't teach exactly how to practice. And it's something, as I moved on in my career, I mean, the first time we installed a drill was in that meeting, and showing them in the meeting, this is what that drill likes. Here's the coaching points. Here's the things we expect. so that when they hit the practice field, it's not like, what are we doing now? What is this here? And I think that, for me, became a big part of how we were able to change that culture, that there were a lot of expectations on how that work is done on the field. You know, that to me, that's what comes off the top of my head when I think about how do you make sure that you're getting that change you want. You've, like I said, spent all that time off season building it. Now you're hitting a different phase, and especially getting into the time like right now when we're recording this, you know, some teams are about to play at the end of the week, some teams are into week one, that there comes a point between that time, the beginning of your season, and week one, where these guys are going to hit a wall. And it's especially evident at that time that they need more direction in terms of how do we do things? How do we approach things? Yeah. What's the reactions? What are the adjustments we need to make?
So one of the things that we're talking about week one now, too, the one thing that comes to mind when I worked in strength conditioning, when I coached high school football down in Mississippi, and I did this when I coached like baseball in the weight room at Tennessee, and then the football team already had this really, and it makes sense, but intensity. You know, when you think about week one, what do we want to do? And I love that you just connected that, Keith, with how to practice and how to have focus, how to have a great effort, and how to have really intensity. You know, when you compete as a weightlifter or a power lifter, you have a certain intensity, just like a football player, a basketball player. You go out to practice and you're there to get better. And that's really what deliberate practice is. When people talk about 10,000 hour rule and those types of things, that's what the focus of deliberate, the key of deliberate practice is focused. It's quality reps, not just reps. If I'm just mindlessly going through stuff, I'm probably not really going to get much better. If I'm exploring a new technique, at least I'm still deliberate. I'm still focused about it. But the key is intensity. And so I'm helping somebody focus and reorient themselves to where when they come in the weight room, you know, there's not a lot of messing around, or it's a lot of, you know what, when you're resting in between sets, and same thing out in a line in a practice field, if you've got a bunch of people in a line, you're inviting distraction and you're inviting that, but you know they've got to rest too. So having different cues where they step on the line. For us in the weight room, it was when you grab the bar, right? Mm-hmm. And I spent time, when you touch the bar, you go into a different world, a different reality. I want you to be in that bar, to be focused, to be locked in, you know, to make the world much smaller, to take your breath and go through a routine. And we would talk about these things just like that. And so that's how we got to have quality reps, you know, in a weight room. And that's how you can teach quality reps out on the field, too. You spend time talking about before practice, and then you go out and you look at how you're structuring, you know, the practices, the small groups or the teamwork, and see if you're helping facilitate that, or if the way that you've got the thing designed too is actually inviting some problems as well.
Yeah, I think about like from the athlete's perspective, and again, we're talking about aligning actions and behaviors with these words, these beliefs and values. So, you know, on a regular basis, athletes constantly perceiving, well, okay, coach is talking about practice. Oh, well, he's also teaching me how to stay focused and what that actually entails, since we're talking about this all the time, and what that looks like out on the field in these drills and activities that are being, you know, consistent, regular, daily basis in various drills and activities and practice.
Yeah. I think between this and the competition thing, we're really hitting on working the process, which is no, you know, revelation. I mean, so talking about the process, and that earlier when we started talking today, we're talking about competition, and really the focus on the winner and the loser is an outcome. And if we're not focused on the process of how to get there, and that's what you did, is I went in one direction and over-exaggerated what it happens if you look at winners and losers and just really hitting that drum of competition. But then you refocused and talked about how at the practice, though, the coaches were coaching them up, pulling the kids aside, telling them what they needed to do to get better. You can't just declare a winner and a loser. It's going to be limited in how much then useful feedback an athlete gets to get better. And so the same thing with like Nick Saban and others. And Nick's gotten a lot of focus this last couple of years, a lot of attention about the work in the process and working his system. And so you start figuring out, you know, what are those things that are going to cause the outcomes? How do I provide the system, the feedback, the environment, the cues, the coach-athlete relationships, the strength conditioning, the nutrition, the school resources? How do I provide this system that is going to help me and the athletes, put them in the best chance to achieve those outcomes? So everybody wants the outcomes, but again, focusing on the process to get there is really the key to being successful.
When you guys look at that process, and I think there's a couple dynamics that I see getting in the way of this. And I've seen it throughout time. I think it's becoming more difficult. We got a generation that likes to communicate in 180 characters or less. And there's been kids in recruiting who, you know, their parents have told me, he doesn't talk on the phone. He just texts. And I've actually, you know, recruited kids in text. But we don't have that. When we go out into the field, we have to be able to communicate. And we have to, I guess, pick up some of the cues from our players. And I've seen cultures essentially destroyed because I think we make the mistake of assuming a lot, and we under communicate, and we don't pay attention to maybe some of those cues that we need to, because ultimately, you know, this stuff isn't just all black and white. You do it this way, it's always this way. That every player is going to be a little bit different, that they need some type of feedback, some reinforcement, sometimes just some understanding, a coach reaching out to them and touching base. And I know, boy, this is something I learned a long time ago from my dad when he was coaching. He's, you know, made the point that at the end of the day, it's not time for a coach to go back into his office and throw on the video of practice or watch the next opponent. That your job at that point is to filter through with your players. Yeah, you have to touch base, especially those guys who, you know, struggled that particular day. To me, that's like a big part of the job. And I see so much, you know, in fact, there was a video out a little while back, you know, about, I think it was about the tone or something. The point was, I saw a lot of responses on hard coaching, that players need to be able to take hard coaching. And I don't know if I've bought into that idea. I don't know if I've ever have. What's your perspective on that, especially in terms of how that relates to, you know, what we're talking about here, process and overall building that culture that's going to fuel your team's success?
So earlier, I almost wanted to respond earlier. You started today talking about technical and tactical skill development. And it's really kind of clear, too, when you stop and when you realize that even that goes through the coach-athlete relationship. You know, we oftentimes think that if I just line people up and teach them how to bend their knees or put their hands together, that, you know, magic's going to happen. But all of that space, that interaction, happens between a holistic person and a holistic coach. You know, somebody that thinks, that feels, that breathes, that is a moving body. And so that's really significant in that noticing the coach-athlete relationship and how you have that communication strategy and relationship with an athlete is going to affect how they hear, perceive, and choose or not to do what the coach asked them to do, or to accept that feedback, or to respond, to ask a question. You know, I'm thinking of some of the ways that are going to hurt the relationship and the communication, and that's, you know, sarcasm, degrading language, and, you know, that tone. Some of that degrading language and tone, if you don't already have an existing relationship with somebody, if you don't know that they care about you holistically, and there's some research now about caring coaches and how athletes perceive caring coaches. If you don't have that relational base and that foundation, then the athlete is not going to be paying attention and will be resistant towards you and fighting you as well. So you've got to have the relationship and realize how that care, degrading, sarcasm filters what you say.
I would just add, you know, just to kind of help overcome the problem that you mentioned with, you know, what are the, you know, dealing with these individual, you know, athletes at an individual level in regards to culture, it might be, you know, useful to develop a plan, much like you would with your technical and tactical skills, where you have that kind of planned out throughout the season, where you know that you're going to be, you know, implementing cover two defense at a particular time or adding. Similarly, with a culture, if you're, you know, where you kind of want to go at the end, is having these things planned out, where they're going to be embedded in different drills and activities during practice, and then also having an evaluation piece of a culture. You know, how well you're what's the strength of it? And we could be creative with different kind of evaluation pieces, at least collecting information and data to see how if athletes' actions, behaviors are aligning with the values and beliefs that we're suggesting, and which athletes aren't, perhaps. And that's where you were getting at, like at the, you know, very individualized level of how to meet athletes at an individual level. So just some food for thought there.
You know, that's interesting. When we're looking at that, we spend a lot of time, I know, evaluating our offense or defense, where we're at with certain personnel. What suggestions do you have as to when's the right time for us to do that? I guess, you know, from an individual perspective, because we all have those athletes we're in charge of, but then also, you know, thinking more team-wide and something that the head coach would do. How can we, I guess, kind of establish that process for evaluating that and getting that feedback both for ourselves and between members of the coaching staff?
Well, I think one way to evaluate that would be at an individual level. If you have clearly defined actions and behaviors that are matching the core values, you can make a rubric of some sort, you know, in a level of 3, 2, and 1, where 1 not being. So what was one of the terms you were talking about? A competitor. Right. And what thinking about what a competitor is, if that's our core value. I'm just bringing that up because we talked right about that earlier in regards to. So what is that? And what are the actions and behaviors that are representative of a high competitor? Right. And then we may put that as a 3. And then as a level 2 is someone that's, you know, midway competitor. Right. And then 1 is someone that's not there. And that way, you know, those are observable behaviors that you can do, much like, and I'll just make the comparison, if you were trying to do an evaluation on whether someone is a good enough wide receiver to catch a ball, you're looking for very specific things to determine if they're a good wide receiver, an average wide receiver, or a poor wide receiver. So what we're doing is just kind of taking that same approach and recreating it to something in our culture. Also, you know, as an evaluation piece, it might be good to just to ask the athletes to evaluate themselves in regards to your core values to get some more information. Maybe they may expose that, hey, I'm just not getting how to be a competitor, if that's one of the things, or resiliency or something, if that's a core value. And then also perhaps as another evaluation strategy is perhaps having others, other perspectives, other coaches look on. Maybe an athletic director. You could, as a coach, prompt the athletic director to perhaps look for certain things, maybe, or another participating, a stakeholder or something to some degree, to offer another perspective on what they're seeing. And the reason why that came up is because you mentioned you were observing practice and you said it was very clear what their culture was in regards to kind of competition. And yes, you know, there were those other underlying things that were happening in there, but it was clear to you. So we would think that as an evaluation piece, right, others looking onto your practice, it should be relatively clear what you're about and in respect to your culture.
Yeah, I actually had a guest on just a couple weeks back, Garrett Stokes, who's the head football coach at Minster High School in Ohio, defending state champs here. And he talked about exactly that he always brings people out to his practice. Some of them are football coaches. Some of them are coaches from different sports. Some of them are administrators. And they learn a lot about their team, both in terms of how well they're practicing and going through the, you know, minutia of practice versus also what is being communicated by the way they work. What is their team really about? And I would suggest that. I know it takes, you know, a little bit of trust and maybe even courage to open yourself up to that and to have somebody give you that feedback. But sometimes, you know, we can't see the forest for the trees when we're in the thick of our season. And I think finding those people to come in, even if it's just someone once a week or once every couple of weeks, I think could provide some valuable feedback.
But I think there's a fascinating point about what makes a quality coach, and that it's somebody then that checks their ego, that can be open to learning from a variety of sources, that it is so, and we don't use this word in coaching, but it's so vulnerable. He's vulnerable enough to allow somebody to come into their space and take that feedback and approach it. Now, that doesn't mean he has to go along with everything they say, but at least he's going to bring that in and get that diversity of voices. And you think about all the people he's interacted with, and over the years, that's probably a ton. And then I started writing down, too, as you guys were talking, you know, and how do you measure people or compete or determine evaluation of athletes. You know, and worked with wrestling. Wrestling's pretty easy because you just have a wrestle off. You know, that's basically the gold standard. If we're at the same weight class and I beat you this week in practice, then I get to go for the competition in most cases. You know, in football, it's a little bit tougher because it's not a one-man show. You could do it as a kicker, I guess, you know, and see who can make the most punts or kicks from certain distance. But with a lineman or a wide receiver, there's different factors. So I started thinking about, you know, that behavioral practice plan checklist, you know, the work in the process. I actually had to have one of these when I was a kid because I got in trouble in grade school. But it's, you know, it's a public thing or is in my locker at school, and that if I was doing the right behaviors, then I got a sticker that day at school, you know, so keep me out of trouble. Same kind of, you know, visual positive reinforcement in that if the athlete is out there, let's say having great effort, you know, great technique, doesn't jump off sides, you can look at some of these things and then spend the time to make that checklist. And, you know, whether you use a sticker or just a marker or a notebook and a journal or get the athlete's input as well, and how to help them reflect and develop themselves in an authentic way. You know, that's a different way of approaching evaluation.
Yeah, and I would think it's another way of looking at possibly how do you wear those helmet decals. And traditionally, you know, it's for a big block, it's for an interception, a touchdown, whatever it might be. But, you know, maybe that landscape of the helmet is used in terms of how well you're performing in the culture. And it doesn't always translate to those touchdowns for everybody on the team. But there's team members who are going to be role players who are very important to that team, who you do need to do things right. They can't just stand off on the side and be on their own program, that they could be rewarded in that way too. I think it's an alternate way of looking at maybe if you want to do helmet decals, how you can use that system that you mentioned there.
Hey, it was one of my notes. I didn't say it, but yeah, I had the stickers on the helmet as a way of, rewarding folks for working the process. And it's hard because the process is often internal and it's not as clear cut to see if somebody's actually doing it. You know, making a big hit or not allowing, you know, third down conversions or something like that as a team goal. Again, those are good team goals, but you've got to do the steps to get there. And so how do I figure out what those steps are? And reward people for doing those types of things and recognize those things. So, you know, and coaches do that. They've got practice player of the day or of the week. Mm-hmm. You know, some young, usually a younger guy that went out and, you know, gave great effort and, you know, maybe blocked a punt or somehow snuck behind the offensive line. You know, you used to see guys do that all the time. They love it. You know, they tackle a running back or a quarterback in the backfield at practice, you know, and then somebody gets, you know, yelled at because they got let that, you know, 5 foot, you know, 440-pound guy get in the backfield and go, how'd that happen? You know, somebody just missed their block.
As we look at this whole idea of process, of culture, all of it really can't be something that's just top-down driven. I mean, when you mentioned Nick Saban in the process, and certainly he's going to set the vision for that, but ultimately they succeed because it's shared from the top of the head coach all the way down to the water boy. You know, everybody in the organization is going to share in part of this. How important, and what does the literature say about culture in terms of the necessity of it being shared?
Yeah, Keith, that's a good point that you're bringing up, because even in Brian's definition that he brought in from Coakley to kind of start off the podcast, one of the key words that he used was shared. And if you're looking at some of the literature, that suggests that, you know, how cultures fail or how they're poor is in respect to shared aspect in relation to that, meaning that, you know, if someone comes in and says, okay, this is what we're going to be, and the rest of the group does not have that vision, then there's a disconnect there. So it's like, you know, how do we get people on board? It's not only that, it's just how can we collaborate with them where we kind of, I'm going to say meet in the middle, but at least have some common ground on some common terms and definitions of what particular words mean. And I'll give you an example, like, if you look at Coach Wooden's, you know, his triangle, and he's got a bunch of those words that are all in there, integrity, focus, and again, it comes back to how many, you know, there's like 50 of them. What I'm getting at is, you know, in general, there are some commonalities across many of them. So what I'm trying to get at is perhaps some similar words that might mean the same thing, but we can kind of collaborate on them and come up with our own meaning and behaviors and actions that are in line with that value to kind of get, you know, I don't want to use the word buy-in, if you will, but it's collaborative, and that way, you know, the people have some skin in the game in respect to that. So that might, you know, in respect to your team, it might be asking questions, asking athletes what is meaningful to them, to football, and what they, you know, what are their goals and aspirations and values, to just kind of get a feel up front and then kind of tailor your own beliefs and values to kind of meet the needs of the group that you're working with in collaboration.
To kind of tie things up, guys, we talked about this podcast really being a chance for us to think about these specific topics, to reflect on our coaching up to this point and think about what we might do here moving forward. Brian, what tips can you offer here as we bring this to a close?
I think from the little things in terms of your sayings on the wall, from what goes in the manual and the playbook to what music gets played at practices or food gets brought in, that all of these things have cultural implications. Who is on the team? Who's represented? Whose values are being put forth? Who's not being considered and why not? And then if you're going to have long-term longevity in a program, you've got to have consideration to bringing people together, to discussing these things, to acknowledging the expectations, having those clearly laid out, alignment between, you know, what you say and what you do, and then adjusting as a coach too to have players allow them opportunity year after year to shape the program. And there might be some things that are non-negotiable, but there might be a lot of things that are negotiable in terms of how you communicate or what phrases and what ways you call certain plays. That helps them out more than it helps the coach out. The coach might have a personal preference, but it's about the athletes learning and their development. And so the coach is going to, be on board with those types of things. So just challenging, I think, those underlying things that are going on and realizing that they all come from a certain place. I wrote down real quickly that a lot of it comes from the military and a lot of the old coaches in football that were officers in the military and learned from military training and conditioning practices as well. And so we still see a lot of those similarities and a lot of coaches today using those things. And so just, you know, checking your, you know, again, those cows or those underlying values that are going to be there and figuring out if it's really in the best interest of the team and the individual athletes.
Well, guys, I really appreciate you taking the time today. This is a great first topic, obviously important at this time of the year that we're aligned in our culture moving forward, whether that's heading into week one or learning from what happened in our first game, both the positives and the negatives. How can our listeners interact with you, maybe ask some questions? We want this to be as interactive as possible. We want this to be a place where coaches can go for answers, even if it's outside of that particular topic we might talk about for that week.
Yeah, with us, for me personally, if you just find me on Twitter, that's probably one of the best places for this kind of stuff. And then I've got other social media too, but personal Twitter account is probably the best thing. It's just at Dr. Garrity, DR for Dr. GEARITY, or email me at brian.garrity@du.edu. You can find me online as well.
Yeah. And I'm on Facebook, Twitter as well. My Twitter handle's Dr. Cook 14. And you can get on email Clayton.Kuklick@du.edu, and then also Facebook.
I just add, Keith, we've got some ideas and topics laid out for the next many weeks to come, and there's no way to answer everything, and some of these things aren't really going to be answerable. They're enduring questions and problems.
Sure.
Other things are going to be technical and things that we can talk about, and you're like, yeah, just no, let's not do that, and let's try something else. But I think hearing from folks and continuing the conversation, we're going to be able to link things and talk about things like, hey, remember back in week one, then when we did this, or week two, we did this. And then, oh yeah, we heard an email from, Coach Jones over there in Cleveland. and those types of things. And we can add it to the blog. So I definitely would encourage people to reach out, and it's all going to help. Same thing. It's a vulnerability on our end to put ourselves out there and go and to challenge what we know and what we think we know. But we'd love to do it, and it's only going to help make us better too.
Guys, again, thanks for your time. I'm looking forward to next week. We're going to be talking about, in general, building a cohesive team and going into some specific topics there. So I look forward to it.
Thanks, Keith. Looking forward to next week. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Keith. We'll see you.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.